This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's talk about our obligation to a country and a country's obligation to us. When I say us, I'm talking about citizens. We're about to talk about Abbey Gate, Afghanistan. You see, they're just some realities of life. And one of those realities of being a citizen, small tribe, big country, is it's going to be younger people who fight wars. Just is. It's a young man's game, as they say. And it's going to be older people who direct wars, younger people who fight in them, younger people who die in them. What's that old saying? It's not my saying. War is old men talking and young men dying. So I get that. I understand that. But we still have to understand that the country you die for, the tribe you die for, has obligations to you as a young soldier, as a young Marine, whatever you may be. The country has an obligation to you. Yes, you may die in combat, but your country owes you two things. Two things. One, don't throw my life away with negligence, with corruption, evil. Don't throw it away. I may have to die, but don't throw it away. Don't make it nothing. And two, if I lose my life for my country owes me a debt of gratitude. They do. The rest of the country needs to see that to inspire more future patriots. My family left behind needs to see that. If you die for your country, you deserve to not have your life thrown away, and your country owes you a debt of gratitude. The men, the old men who sent you to die, should speak your name, should honor your sacrifice. That is how it should work, whether it's a major country or a tiny tribe. And today is the 4-year anniversary of Abbey Gate, and neither of those two things happened for our brave 13 warriors who gave up their lives on that day. Just a little recap, a little refresher. I know you already know, but we left Afghanistan. Why did we leave the way we left? Because we were already going to go. Trump had already said, hey, 2021, we're going to get out. Why did we leave the way we left? Well, this is another one of those things that just makes your head want to explode. The Biden administration knew we were coming up on the anniversary of September 11th. All they cared about were poll numbers, approval ratings. Didn't care about lives lost, sacrifices made. These things never occurred to those demonic communists. They wanted something to celebrate on September 11th. So they simply issued the order. State Department simply issued the order. Hey, everyone, get out. Wait, what? When? Now. We're just leaving. What about all the equipment? Nope, leave it. We're leaving. Okay, what about the terrorists we have locked up at Bagram Air Force Base? Who cares? Let them out. We're leaving. Okay. And so we left. And it's just the callousness of the people who run this country. We leave right when basically the entire Biden administration goes on vacation. Do you remember that? I haven't forgotten. As we leave and Afghanistan begins to fall immediately to the Taliban, immediately, Joe Biden goes on vacation. Surprise, surprise, he was always on vacation. Secretary of State Antony Blinken goes on vacation. Jen Psaki, White House press set, goes on vacation. You can't even get a hold of anybody. We leave, the country's collapsing, and there's no, hello, anybody there? Nobody's there even at the White House. So, it looks bad. United States of America just caused the country's collapse after occupying it for 20 years. They drag poor Joe Biden off the beach to sit down with committed communist George Stephanopoulos. And this as our country, as we're watching our country be embarrassed, this was the answer of the President of the United States of America.
But we've all seen the pictures. We've seen those hundreds of people packed into a C-17. We've seen Afghans falling.
That was 4 days ago, 5 days ago.
Makes me so angry. It's 4 or 5 days ago. Why are you stressing about it? It's 4 or 5 days ago. Evil people. And so, what happened from there? Well, that's what brought us to this tragedy, you see. We had a very secure Air Force base, Bagram, a secure place to conduct operations, honestly, to get out of the country, to evacuate safely, smartly. We had a secure place. Biden administration handed that to the animals. So then they didn't like the optics of people falling from C-130s, and they decided they had to do something. And so they just grabbed a bunch of Marines, sailors, Army troops, and sent them into a civilian air force, a civilian air base, not an air base, sorry, civilian airport. It's not even an air base. They tried to make it an air base. You know, you tried to secure it, but you've been to civilian airports before. They're not made to be secured in the same way a military base is made to be secured. It's just not, you don't have the facilities there to make it that way. And it ends up, we have a bunch of our troops standing in crowds of people. Oh, remember those bad guys we let out of jail in Bagram? Yeah, there were a bunch of ISIS guys in there. Now, I don't know that we have confirmation on this, but some ISIS guy, whether he was on Bagram or not, shows up with a suicide vest full of ball bearings and incinerates 13 of our troops, men and women. By the way, remember, we do have testimony that we had the guy in our sights. We had a Marine Corps sniper who had the guy in our sights, requested permission to shoot before he blew himself up. Permission was denied. After 13 of our troops had their lives thrown away, absolutely thrown away, the President of the United States of America stumbled up to the podium, and this is how it went.
An attack by a group known as ISIS-K took the lives of American service members standing guard at the airport and wounded several others seriously. We have so much to do. It's within our capacity to do it. We just have to remain steadfast. Steadfast. Ladies and gentlemen, they gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
They gave me a list. The first person I was instructed to call on. That was the press conference the commander-in-chief gave after we threw away the lives of 13 of our best. Then, almost salt in an open wound, their bodies came home. Try to imagine what that would be like for a parent. The agony that they still go through right now. As you're watching, 4 years later, don't think that that's gone away. You're watching me right now, they're still in agony, anguish. Very brutal day. The bodies come home. You show up, a flag-draped coffin. The President of the United States shows up and spends his time checking his watch.
It didn't go well. He talked a bit more about his own son than he did my son, and that didn't sit well with me.
In reference to the checking of his watch, that didn't happen just once. That happened on every single one that came out of that airplane. It happened on every single one of them. They would release the salute, and he looked down at his watch on every last one, all 13. He looked down at his watch.
I actually leaned into my son's mother's ear and I said, I swear to God, if he checks his watch one more time, and that was only probably four times in, I couldn't look at him anymore after that. Just considering, especially the time and why we were there, It was, I found to be the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen.
13 bodies. The old man who sent them to die as they got off the plane. Oh, man. How much longer? We gotta wrap this up. It's pudding time. Oh, gosh. Another one? Brutal. So outrageous. And then we incinerated 10 innocent people. The administration once again chasing approval numbers, poll numbers, sent a Reaper drone, and we nuked 10 Afghanis, of them adorable children, completely innocent. And the chairman of the Joint Chiefs at the time, Mark Milley, after we just incinerated innocent children, got on TV and said this.
Were there others killed? Yes, there are others killed. Who they are, we don't know. We'll try to sort through all that. But we believe that the procedures at this point, I don't want to influence the outcome of an investigation, but at this point we think that the procedures were correctly followed and it was a righteous strike.
A righteous strike. Dead kids. All that tragedy, all that embarrassment, all that sadness, and the old men who sent those people to die, what kind of remorse did they feel? And by the way, before I play you this, remember that for most of this country's history, commanders and politicians who send young men to die, it eats at them when those young men die. You have any idea how many World War II commanders of various kinds, admirals, generals, later on committed suicide because of the remorse they felt for men who died under their command? That's the kind of old men we used to have. This is what we had then.
Do you have regrets about their withdrawal or how the withdrawal occurred from Afghanistan that cost the lives of 13 of our service members?
I don't have any regrets.
And so for all this talk of chaos, I just didn't see it, not from my perch. At one point during the evacuation, there was an aircraft taking off full of people, Americans and Afghans alike, every 48 minutes, and not one single mission was missed. So I'm sorry, I just won't buy the whole argument of chaos.
Mr. President, when you meet a failure in Afghanistan, mistakes. There was a report on Afghanistan withdrawal saying there was failure, mistakes. Do you admit there was mistakes during the withdrawal and before?
No. All the evidence is coming back together. Remember what I said about Afghanistan? I said Al-Qaeda would not be there. I said it wouldn't be there. I said we'd get help from the Taliban. What's happening now? What's going on? Read your press. I was right.
It fills me with so much anger. 4 years later, the callousness threw their lives away. Didn't even honor them afterwards. Now, look, let's not make it all bad. We do have a new Secretary of Defense singing a much different tune.
On behalf of this beautiful group, on behalf of these families, on behalf of your loved ones who fought for our nation, America deserves answers. As far as what happened in Afghanistan, the military needs to answer for what happened in Afghanistan. So upon the president's direction, immediately we initiated an investigation which showed that there needed an even deeper dive. So Sean Parnell, our Pentagon spokesman, who himself is an Afghanistan veteran, is leading this effort. It's a top priority for us. We're getting access to all the documents necessary, why decisions were made, why they weren't made, why certain force protection measures were ignored. Again, there's never been accountability for this. It's something that Joe Biden allowed to happen that never should have happened. Any objective observer knows that's not how you leave a country. And certainly these families know better than anyone else. These families deserve answers. We're going to be honest about it. We're going to get to the bottom of it. Sean Parnell, an Afghanistan vet, is leading it. And we're doing it on behalf of the American people. So I would anticipate middle of 2026. That's how thorough of a review we're doing.
It's good. It makes me feel better. And credit where it's due, President Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, this is how it's done.
Thank you very much. This is a very special group of people. I've been with them from the beginning, Abbey Gate. It's a four-year anniversary. So we're signing a proclamation honoring them and honoring you and honoring your loved one.
These families deserve answers. We're going to be honest about it. We're going to get to the bottom of it.
And I know from this president, as he's made a commitment, that that memory will not be forgotten.
We're so proud of you. We're so proud of your loved ones for giving their life for our country. This is a rectification of a wrong. We correct that wrong today, and we're going to keep on fighting to understand, as Pete said, what happened so it never happens to another family again. But God love you all. God bless you. We're so thrilled to have you here in the People's Oval Office.
That's well done. Sarah Adams did her own investigation into all this. She has a lot to say. Next. I love sleeping. I love that feeling when you wake up in the morning and you just know it's going to be a good day because I'm rested. And vice versa, when your eyes feel like sandpaper in the morning and you tossed and you turned and you just know I'm going to be in a bad mood all day. Work's going to suck. This is going to be horrible. That's why I love Dream Powder. Because there's a lot of things that can help you sleep. I know that. But you know what almost every one of them have in common? You feel horrible when you wake up. Yeah, you slept, but you wake up and you feel like you didn't sleep at all. Dream Powder is natural. All natural things. It's a cup of hot chocolate. It's got magnesium and all kinds of things in it. You'd never know it. It's a delicious cup of hot chocolate. I have a cup of hot chocolate every night before bed. Out. Wake up feeling good every single day. You want to feel like that? Shopbeam.com/JesseKelly saves you a fortune. Go. Get a bag of Dream Powder. Okay, so let's dig into what actually happened since we were lied to by the Biden administration over and over and over again, who was only worried about covering their own rear ends. What happened? What happened at Abbey Gate? What happened with this ISIS guy? Joining me now, somebody who knows a lot about this. She wrote, Abbey Gate, Know Thy Enemy. It is out now. Sarah Adams. Sarah, just talking about this entire thing drives me freaking up the wall. First of all, who are you? What's your background? Introduce yourself to the folks, please.
Yeah, just as a quick overview, I'm a former CIA targeter. We actually carried out an investigation identifying the terrorist who did the attack in Benghazi back in 2012. And since then, we've been doing a lot of different investigations. We did Abbey Gate. We did the October 7th Hamas attack. So it's just a continuation of our investigations.
Okay, so tell me about this investigation on Abbey Gate, whatever you're allowed to tell me, of course, sources, how you did it, what you found, just lay it all on us.
Yeah, well, really simply, we weren't even planning to do this investigation, and then April of last year, the CENTCOM put out theirs, and they had not even found the true name of the suicide bomber. And so I was like, well, how hard can it be? And so we actually did some initial work and we found his name within 3 weeks. And that's when I was like, okay, we have to start investigating this ourselves because the government's not doing it. So as a lot of people know, we've been running networks for the last 10 years to focus on the Benghazi side of things. But after Kabul fell, all the terrorists shifted back to Afghanistan. So all of our networks now are in Afghanistan. So it's actually pretty easy to collect because everybody's intermingling in the country, even in terrorist camps now. It's not like just an Al-Qaeda camp. There's 5 different terrorist groups in that camp, so they've all kind of come together.
Okay, first of all, who are the 5 terrorist groups, and why couldn't CENTCOM get answers?
Yeah, when we talk about Abbey Gate, it's really interesting. It was mostly plotted by Sirajuddin Haqqani, who's the Taliban's Minister of Interior, but most Americans know him as the head of the Haqqani Network, and then Sanaullah Ghaffari, who is the head of the Islamic State Khorasan province. But as a lot of people know, to commit a terrorist attack, you have to get a fatwa issued, right? So they went to the Taliban's political commission to do so, but one person who was in the meeting to approve the attack was Abdullah bin Laden, the son of Hamza bin Laden, okay? So now we have ISKP, the Taliban's political commission, and Al-Qaeda, right? So that's already 4 groups involved. So it's very frustrating that it's really been covered up. A lot of Americans were kind of taught that this was like a lone suicide attack, right? And nothing like this, it came out of nowhere, when actually the planning is very meticulous.
Okay, I Can you elaborate a little bit more on ISIS-K working with the Taliban? Because you get so many conflicting reports on this, that they're actually against each other, that they're fighting. ISIS is fighting Al-Qaeda. They're all fighting the Taliban. No, they're working together. But what is the true story?
The true story, it really goes back to 2015. 2015, they basically put a council together called the Shura Mujahideen. And that council was ISIS, the Taliban, and a number of other local groups to take on Afghan security forces and the Afghan National Army. So that's when the groups first came together to work on a joint cause. But this iteration started in 2019 as Sirajuddin Haqqani was seeing the Doha deal put into place and realizing he couldn't send his own suicide bombers and attackers to do attacks. He needed a proxy. So he actually took Ghaffari, who I told you is leading ISKP, from the Haqqani network, seeded him into ISIS to use him as a proxy. And so that's now been going on about 6 years. So he's basically just a front man for the Haqqani network inside of ISIS.
Okay, what's the red umbrella?
Yeah, the red umbrella is simply, it was one of those visual markers at Abbey Gate. So you knew how to get to like the Marines to get out safely, right? If you're an American, or if you had paperwork to get in the gate. So it was one of those symbols of hope. You knew when you got to it, there'd be a US Marine or some sort of military person who would like take care of you and help you out. And so a lot of people in the crowd obviously looked at this as a beacon of hope, and I can maybe get out of Afghanistan, right, if I can get to these Marines.
Okay, what do we know about the bomber?
So the bomber is really interesting. He, you know, was an ISIS suicide bomber that first actually deployed to India, and he was supposed to do an attack in New Delhi. He got caught by the Indians, deported, ended up in Bagram. So he was in prison, actually, you know, when we were in country, but then he was released the night of August 15th by the Taliban because ISKP chose him and two others kind of as a suicide bomber cell to be the attackers, and he ultimately was the one asked to do the operation. So he'd been long in ISIS for probably about 6, 7, 8 years by that point, so well-trained.
Okay, so could you explain why the Indians would deport somebody who was in their country getting ready to incinerate a bunch of women and kids instead of throwing him in some dank Indian dungeon somewhere?
Yeah, that would have been better. Unfortunately, he was Afghan, but we believe the CIA tipped the Indians off, and the CIA requested he be brought to Bagram, and then, of course, they had no endgame for him, as you can see, and he ended up released. Like a lot of the terrorists we caught over the years, unfortunately, they really only spend time in prison 5 to 7 years for the most part.
Okay, so the goal of the Abbey Gate attack, was it just chaos, embarrassment? Was it just to kill people? What was the goal? What do we think?
The goal was actually to harm our troops. If you actually look at some of the people involved, you know, I talked about the masterminds, but there's a very interesting terrorist involved who helped move the bomber to Kabul, and he's the son of Mullah Dadullah Lange. That was basically one of the most senior operations we ever carried out against the Taliban commander when we killed his father, right? So there's also some personal retribution inside of this attack that really nobody's been honest about, you know, with those who've been impacted.
Okay. What could we have done to prevent this attack? Could we have prevented it? I mean, obviously not giving up Bagram would have been the best way to prevent it, but is there a way we could have secured a civilian airport to have prevented this?
The way they did it, no, because they announced the evacuation on August 13th. The planning for the attack started on August 14th. We had such a hasty thrown together evacuation plan. There were so many holes in it that it was so easy to take advantage of. And then our government made our troops be on the other side of the Taliban. It was the Taliban who did the external security at the airport. So because of how we set that up, we had no plane, and then we relied on the Taliban. Unfortunately, you know, our troops and all those innocent people were sitting ducks, right? Now, if they would have planned a real evacuation months before, like they should have, it would have been a different situation, but not in the way the hasty withdrawal happened.
Did we try to cover up all this stuff afterwards, our government? I mean,
Yeah, I 100% think they did. First off, our government definitely covered up the Haqqanis were involved, right? I just told you Suraji Haqqani was one of the masterminds. Obviously, most people know they covered up a drone strike on an innocent, you know, aid worker. They were only told to tell the truth about it when it got leaked to the press. And then, as I told you, one of Bin Laden's sons, you know, was involved in the plotting behind this. That alone shows that they've covered up. And, you know, even the commander who told the suicide bomber, hey, you're in a good enough spot to kill enough troops, that's the son-in-law of Dr. Ayman al-Zawahiri, who was the current head of al-Qaeda at the time. So, yes, this has been completely covered up. And they just want you to believe this is an ISIS lone wolf, right? Like they did after the New Orleans attack in January. And they just want you to be happy with that explanation. And it's not true. Multiple groups work together on this and they're planning other things. And you need to be honest with the public so they can see these tactics and be prepared for what's coming.
Planning other things?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, when we abandoned Afghanistan, it became the base again for international terrorism. And we stopped actually doing strikes there. The last over-the-horizon strike was July of 2022. So for 3 years, the terrorists have been able to plot, plan, train unabated. So they've been now deploying people to Europe, to the United States, and they are planning another 9/11 style attack in the United States. And we're easily able to get in over our borders, but also our visa system, as most people know, is very weak, and a lot of people get approved who shouldn't be approved and who hate this country. And so we have a lot of holes that we need to fill too.
What about all those refugees we brought in when the Biden administration just started chucking Afghanis in the back of C-130s?
Yeah, so that's a whole nother issue. A huge percentage of them were never vetted. They never worked for the U.S. government. You know, in one situation, there was a girl I rescued and she got to Ramstein and she called her brother from Ramstein. He's like, how'd you get a phone? She's like, oh, I'm using one of the U.S. Army members. He's using me as his interpreter. He said, isn't the place full of interpreters? And she said, no, we couldn't find any. She said, I'm talking to these people. They never worked for the U.S. government. So they won't look at me. They're too extreme. They won't speak to a woman. They speak no English. In another case, one of my friends was an air marshal and he flew a flight from Ramstein to D.C. In the middle of the flight, they got called and said, oops, we let a terrorist on the plane, but don't worry, you can still land in D.C. with him. So they know they brought terrorists in, and it's a huge problem. And we do need to go back and re-vet everybody brought out in that hasty withdrawal, because we did bring in the enemy.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate it. Jerry Dunleavy is going to join us next. I love patronizing companies that share and promote my values, don't you? I like that we have woken up to that on the right, that we realize we have to put our money where our morals are. That's why I love Pure Talk. Verizon is a terrible company. AT&T, T-Mobile, they take your money and they use it for the worst possible stuff. Pure Talk has never done that and will never do that. Pure Talk is run by a Vietnam veteran, two tours with Mac Vsog. When you see Pure Talk giving back, it's always the vets, getting veterans back on their feet. Remember what they did for Independence Day? Sending out American flags for free to veterans, whoever you nominated. Just send them American flags. I love my company. And I pay half of what I was paying? That doesn't hurt either. Switch to Pure Talk. You'll thank yourself for it. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. I mean, I usually would tell you I'm excited to talk to Jerry, but this is such an awful subject that I'm not excited to talk about. But I am very proud of him, because there weren't very many entities out there who were willing to hold the Biden administration accountable after what they did at Abbey Gate, after what they did in Afghanistan. And Jerry Dunleavy, my friend, was one of them. He wrote the book on it. It is the book, Kabul, the Untold Story of Biden's Fiasco and the American Warriors Who Fought to the End. It's one to pick up. I am warning you, it's going to be bad for your blood pressure. It was certainly bad for mine. It should be reading in schools. It should be. Joining me now, Jerry Dunleavy. Jerry, okay, why write a book? I know you're a writer anyway. I know you're a journalist at heart, unlike me. I'm just a big mouth. Why write a book?
It's a great question. You know, I did not serve, but my brother did multiple tours in Afghanistan, and I'm good friends with a lot of people that did serve during the post 9/11 wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, including my co-author, James Hassan, who did a tour in Afghanistan as well. And of course, my brother did multiple tours there. I did feel a personal connection to the war. And for a very long time, it was clear that things were not going in a good direction there. But in the summer of 2021, it became abundantly clear to me that this 20-year war was going to end in disaster. And so I was technically a DOJ reporter at the time, but I told my editors, this is what I'm going to be working on for the foreseeable future. And so, unfortunately, I detailed the collapse and fall of Afghanistan, the Taliban takeover, and the debacle and the deadly Abbey Gate attack. And, you know, I did everything that I could to cover the story, and it became abundantly clear to me that there was not going to be accountability, especially there was not going to be any accountability for the generals and military commanders and for the intelligence community, both of whom failed. Because, look, President Joe Biden obviously screwed this up in every way that he possibly could, right? And Jake Sullivan and the NSC screwed up in every way they possibly could. The State Department and Antony Blinken screwed this up as much as they could. But we are 4 years out, and the military, so the military commanders like Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Milley, and the commander of CENTCOM at the time, General McKenzie, and the intelligence community, there has been no accountability whatsoever. In fact, the Biden administration, of course, has covered, you know, was happy to cover for the military and the IC on this. But some Republicans joined in that as well. It was a simpler narrative to just kind of pin it on Biden and the silly folks at the State Department, and to let the military and the IC skate on this. And the military and the IC played their parts in why everything went wrong in 2021 as well. And so I've been sort of on a personal crusade since then to get that accountability, to get those answers, because, you know, not to go on my rant much longer here, but it's important to get answers and accountability, not just for the 13 who died at Abbey Gate and their families, and not just for the 2,400 plus U.S. troops who died in Afghanistan during those 20 years. It's also important because we're going to be in another major war. And the next adversary that we fight, whether it's Iran or Russia or especially China, you know, those folks are not the Taliban. You know, the Taliban in many ways was tough and tenacious, but the next war that we're going to be in is going to be a lot tougher than the Taliban. And if we don't learn these lessons, if the Pentagon and the military and the IC don't admit that they got this wrong, then we're going to be in a world of hurt. And unfortunately, you know, when you're in a war against a serious adversary like the Chinese, it's going to be more than 13 people and potentially even more than 2,400 people whose lives are going to be at risk. So it's very important that that we get answers and hold people accountable here.
Jerry, can you help me understand why no one seemed to be interested in holding military accountable, intelligence accountable? I mean, I know you were famously on the House Foreign Affairs Committee to the investigation, and then you bailed, you walked on it, and you can talk about that, but why is there no interest in it? I mean, you look back at historic wars like World War II, it's almost like we were too harsh on some of these military commanders. We'd court-martial them for mistakes and stuff like that. Now, nobody did anything wrong. Why?
So, you know, from my from my best analysis and from my personal experience being on Capitol Hill and being on this investigation, look, obviously the Biden administration and the left, they were perfectly happy to run cover for the military and the IC. Now, the Biden administration and people on the left weren't thrilled that Biden was being raked over the coals for this and the State Department was being raked over the coals for this. But look, if they were able to shield, you know, half of the problem, then that's what they were happy to do. It's more complicated on the right, and it's frankly more frustrating to me that some folks on the right were willing to participate in letting the military and the military commanders and generals especially escape any accountability for this. Part of it is I think that they wanted there to be a simpler narrative. And the more people that you start to bring in to being responsible beyond Biden and maybe his little inner circle of Blinken and Sullivan, the more complicated the political narrative gets. Part of it also is that I think that some people on the right and some Republicans on Capitol Hill have sort of perverted this idea of supporting the troops and supporting the boots and supporting people in uniform. And they've taken that, which is extremely important and noble, and extended that all the way out to sort of the generals can do no wrong. And what I try to get across to people is, look, you know, there are plenty of generals that have served honorably and bravely and all of that, but many generals have gotten to where they are because they have been politicians. Unfortunately, to climb the ladder, a lot of times, to become a general, to get yourself into these positions, you have to be a politician. And we have to hold generals accountable the same way that we would hold anyone else accountable. In fact, it's probably more important, because when other department heads or agencies or whatever make mistakes, it's bad. You know, we lose money, there's fraud, there's abuse. When generals make mistakes, people's lives are at risk, troops' lives are at risk. The success of missions and battles and wars are at risk. And unfortunately, the investigation that I was part of, which was run at the time on the House Foreign Affairs Committee by the then Chairman McCaul, they made a very explicit decision that they were going to pin this on Biden, and they were going to pin this on the State Department, and they were going to let the generals off the hook. And so they very explicitly decided to let Milley skate and to let McKenzie skate. It's frustrating, and it's dangerous, honestly, for the future, you know, because this is a 20-year war that ended in defeat, and there's you know, a lot of reasons. There's 20 years of mistakes, but there were some real mistakes in 2021 that these generals made and that these commanders made, and so far they haven't been held accountable. A bright spot in all of this, of course, is that Secretary Pete Hegseth has launched his own investigation inside the Pentagon, where he has very directly said that he wants to hold people responsible, that he wants to get answers, that he wants accountability. That investigation that Hegseth launched just started, but you know, there is a real chance there to hold some folks accountable, and so I'm cautiously optimistic about that.
Jerry, we spent all those years in Afghanistan supposedly training the Afghan security forces, the Afghan army, training and equipping them so they could fight on their own and we could say goodbye. We said goodbye. I know we did it poorly in every sense of the word. We said goodbye and they collapsed in about 5 minutes. Why?
It's a great question. And in fact, it's one of the big things that that former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Milley, really needs to be held accountable for. So he was, as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, you are the top military advisor to the president of the United States. So at that time, that was President Joe Biden. Milley was out there in the summer of 2021 claiming that the Afghan security forces were 325,000 to 350,000 strong. Now, everyone knows that that wasn't true. Everyone knew at the time that that wasn't true. Now, the big fictional number that everyone had kind of settled on in 2021 was 300,000. So you had Biden and Blinken and Sullivan and everyone running around claiming that the Afghan military was 300,000 strong. Milley was out there inflating an already fictional number up to 325,000 or 350,000. In reality, the Afghan military was vastly smaller than that. What they were able to, what was actually being fielded on a day-to-day basis was, I would say by 2021, maybe half that. Okay. And at the same time, folks within the Biden administration, including, I believe, Milley, were likely underestimating what the Taliban was able to field. And so when you do a net assessment, a serious net assessment, I think, of what the Afghan military was capable of in 2021 and what the Taliban was capable of in 2021, I think that the reality was that the Taliban was much stronger than people were giving them credit for, and the Afghan military was much weaker than people were giving them credit for. You combine that with the fact that, look, the U.S. military had years to figure out how to try to support the Afghan, how to train the Afghan military to get them ready, and then how to support them from afar once we were gone, because we had successive presidents, Obama, Trump, and Biden, who were all signaling that they wanted to leave Afghanistan. And yet the U.S. military never figured out how to properly get this Afghan military to be cohesive. They never figured out how to get them to function without U.S. support. And in fact, in many ways, the U.S. military built the Afghan military around U.S. support. And so the U.S. in 2021 quickly pulled not just our advisors and our logistics and our ISR and our support and our maintenance support and our support for their Air Force and for their ground forces, pulled all of this in rapid fashion. And it was clear that there was no, that there had been no real planning about how to continue the Afghans, to continue to support the Afghans from afar. And so this all collapsed very rapidly. Obviously, the Afghan forces share their, you know, piece of the blame here. But, you know, as an American, as the U.S. had been there for 20 years, I think that we need to look long and hard about why the U.S. military failed in its mission to field a capable force that was able to sustain this. Now, one thing that I always kind of try to tell people is that another thing that Milley has led the way on is claiming that the Afghan military collapsed and the Taliban took over in just 11 days. Now, look, the Taliban took over very quickly in 2021, but you could track district by district the Taliban taking over Afghanistan very, very, very soon after Biden's withdrawal order in April and the U.S. beginning an extremely rapid retrograde in May of 2021. And so the Taliban started a serious onslaught in May, increased it in June, increased it in July, and then increased it again in August with great success by August 15th. But I don't want people like Milley to get away with his inflation of the size of the Afghan military. And I don't want him to get away with this idea that, well, this all just happened in 11 days in August of 2021, so what can you do? We all saw it happening starting in May, June, and July. And there were things that the U.S. could have done to stem the bleeding, to stave off the Taliban advance, to get serious about holding on to Bagram, as you saw the Taliban taking over. There were a lot of things that the U.S. could have done that we did not do. So I don't want people like Milley to get away with just saying, well, it happened in like a week and some change, so what can you do? There were months where this was happening, where the ground was shifting from underneath our feet, and we did not respond.
You got away with enough. Jerry, thank you, brother. Awesome, as always. Appreciate you. Final thoughts next. I love feeling good all the time. This morning, you know what I did? It's kind of a routine for me. Got some blueberries, got a couple breakfast tacos, had my male vitality stack from Chop sitting there. I like to start my day out with natural herbal supplements that have my T levels through the roof because it makes me feel good all day long, full of energy, full of pep. Do you want to feel like that all the time? Whether you're a man, woman, young, old, Chalk has natural herbal supplements that will make your entire life better. Not just this little thing or that little thing, your life will be, you'll be better at work, you'll be better at school, you'll be better at home, be better in your relationships. Go try it. And look, if you don't feel better, 60 days, 90 days, cancel your subscription. I've been taking a male vitality stack for over 3 years. Chalk.com/JesseTV gets you a huge discount. Go. My final thoughts are this. Pray for those families. Pray for the Abbeygate families. They lost somebody precious to them. And days like today hurt. They hurt extremely badly. Honor the fallen. Pray for the families. Let's treat our future sacrifices better than we treated the last ones. All right, we'll do it again.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.